Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Trueblood.
And I want to remind you about the current giveaway that we have going on. If you leave a rating and review on iTunes, we're going to do a drawing for a free month of the Student Pastor Network launched in September, studentpastornetwork.com, to find out more information there. So head over to iTunes, leave a rating and review, and you will be entered to win that free month of Student Pastor Network training. And we're going to reveal who wins that at the beginning of January. So the contest runs through December. December 31st will be the last day that you can enter. And then we'll announce the winner in January. Leave us a rating and review. It helps people find the podcast just like you found it.
With me today, as usual, is John Paul Basham.
Yo.
And we have special guest Brock Gill in our studio today. Illusionist, stunt artist, evangelist. Both John Paul and I have done events with Brock, and he is absolutely amazing. Brock, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for that great introduction. Thank you. It's good to be here. I actually have one question. I'm a little confused right now.
Like, yes.
Where are the cameras? I don't know which camera to look into. I don't know.
They're everywhere. It's a hidden camera studio.
Is this audio only?
It is audio only.
Well, I'm kind of confused because when I got here, they told me I needed to go to hair and makeup, and I spent an hour down there doing hair and makeup. So
that was just for us.
Okay. Okay. Good.
That was for our benefit.
That was a hint. Okay.
That's right.
Trying to cultivate my face for radio.
Okay.
That's right. Which I'm thankful the face of radio is always good. So Brock, tell the audience a little bit about what you do.
I've been, for the last almost 20 years, I've been traveling full-time on the road as an illusionist, stunt artist, evangelist. And what I do is a show. I go into churches, I go into, you know, schools, colleges, and other different, you know, Christian events, and I share the gospel, but the platform for me is an illusion show. So I go in and, you know, we advertise in the city, we have churches kind of work together, we have them inviting the public, and, you know, students are inviting their friends, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, words out in the high schools, but essentially we get all of these people to come to a venue, whether it's a church or a, you know, high school theater, for example. And I do a show, it's about a 90-minute show, and it's really fun, interactive, it's got comedy and it's got stunts and it's got a lot of different things. And it brings people kind of past those walls. It breaks walls down, brings them to the edge of their seat, metaphorically and maybe even literally speaking, so that I can introduce the gospel. So essentially, I begin to share Christ with them. You know, I'm preaching, you know, without them even realizing, yeah. Oh, this is the preaching time. So it just kind of smoothly goes right into it. And it's been really effective. We've seen a lot of people commit to follow Jesus, a lot of unchurched people. It's pretty awesome.
So one of the things that we've talked about on the podcast a lot is how to think through events strategically to have a place where it's people from the community or unchurched people or students bringing their friends, but just how to think through that event strategically in order to get to the gospel, in order to not just fill a room with people, but have something that's there for them that's life-changing as a part of that. So filling a room is great, but what you do with them there is more important. And I can tell you, audience, listeners, I mentioned that we've done events with Brock, and I've seen a lot of illusionists and done a lot of events, and we've had several come in and out. But one of the things that I appreciate so much about you and having seen you do your ministry is it's always focused on the gospel. Like you do a great show and the magic is top notch and all of those things. It's done with excellence, but really more than anyone else, I can say, like, you do it for that preaching moment, for the moment of leading students to a place where they hear and clearly understand the gospel. And so that's one of the reasons why we wanted Brock on the show today to talk about these kind of things. But I would just throw that out there at the beginning. That's one of the things that I've appreciated about your ministry for a lot of years, is that it is clearly gospel every single time.
Well, thanks. And that is really that is our passion. That's the only reason we do what we do, is to make the gospel clear. We want to build the kingdom. We want to advance the gospel. And so every effort and it's all the hard work, everything is for that moment. So as we go into a city, we try to make everything very strategic, and through, you know, the promotion, the marketing, publicity, all those different types of aspects, working together with the local church to basically get people who would not normally listen to the gospel. We want them to be in a room where they do hear the gospel. So those who'd never go to church, they'll come to my show.
Yeah.
Those who have been in church for a long time, who may think they're a Christian, well, they're now going to hear the message in a new and fresh kind of way that may be different than the normal person that they listen to. Even if it's the message is the same, just the fact that it's kind of like something's different, they'll start listening in a different way, which is why we see not only unchurched people saved, but we also see those who have been in the church for 50, 60 years come into a relationship with Jesus. I'm talking 60, 70, 80-year-old, you know, grandmas and grandpas, which is unbelievable.
That's awesome. So talk a little bit about how you got into magic and then that moment when you realized, man, this is something that God has given me to be able to use as a platform to preach the gospel.
Right. So, you know, it basically worked like this. I was just kind of a college dropout at the time, and I ended up going and finishing my degree. But in those few years of me just kind of lost and trying to figure out what to do with my life, I was praying that God would give me some sort of way to do evangelism, and I wanted it to be creative. Now, I wasn't creative, or maybe I was, just I just didn't realize it. But I had no like art or anything like or any training or experience. I was just kind of a normal dude. Matter of fact, I was working at a sawmill. I was just a blue collar like factory worker.
Wow.
And but I was praying every day, like, God, show me how I can, you know, do evangelism. How can I reach people? And so outside of, you know, quote ministry, I was just as a believer, I was trying to reach people I worked with, my friends, you know. And I was always trying to find creative ways to do that. Sometimes it was strategic ways. Well, and as I was working there, I had a lot of time to pray. I had to wear ear protection, so I'm listening, you know, to God a lot because I couldn't talk to anyone else, you know. And I just started to hear those whispers of, essentially, he gave me this vision to learn how to do a magic show, illusion show, and use that to share the gospel. In the moment, I thought, this is weird. I don't know how in the world this is ever going to work. But
was there any kind of interest in magic prior to, or was it just like out of the blue?
Okay,
hey, this is something I can do.
Great question. I was 22 at the time. I'd never seen a magic trick. You know, like I'd never seen. I just never. But as I was praying, a friend of mine showed me something, and I thought, this is really cool. And it took a little, maybe I'm dense, but it took me a little time before I realized that God was using that to open my eyes to it.
Huh.
And so I went and bought a book, and I started like learning the techniques and things and practicing. And but no, I'd never even been to like a real magic show. I mean, it was just, no, it was like a Noah build a boat kind of moment.
Yeah.
What's a boat? What do you mean?
That's awesome. So then you're in the sawmill.
Yeah.
You said God just kind of put that on your heart. And then from there.
Yeah. So a lot of prayer, fasting. I did a 21 day fast where I quit my job and was just like, all right, I'm committing this to prayer and I'm just going to listen to God.
Wow,
and
that's dedication to a fast.
Yeah.
And quit eating and working.
Right. Right. All at the same time. It was. But let me tell you, like, it sounds maybe extreme, but it was really like, there was this overwhelming sense of like, it is time. Mm. God is preparing me for something. And I knew that I needed to fast, and I knew I needed to quit my job and kind of on faith, kind of get ready for this. And I did the fast, and right after that, I actually went to another part-time job for like 2 weeks and realized, this is not it. I'm supposed to do what God's called me to do. And I immediately started getting bookings, and which the irony is I didn't even know how to do a show yet, you know?
What kind of tricks were you doing just right out of the gate?
I mean, I was still learning how to pick up a deck of cards and trying to figure out how to shuffle and fan a deck of cards. I just didn't know anything, you know? I was learning the basics. But somehow people knew that a couple friends, and they had heard that I was getting into it, and somehow people heard that I was already into it. So the first phone call was like, yeah, I can be there. I can do it, you know? And I remember going, let me tell you the first, this is a crazy story, but on the way to the very first show, me and my roommate, we're headed to the show. Got my pickup truck with a few things, and I'd learned how to do all that stuff like the week of. It was like, I'm trying to figure out how to do this stuff like literally right up to the last minute. And we're going down the interstate. We're in Louisiana, and We're on I-49, just, I think, near Shreveport, and we see a guy juggling on the side of the road. It was so weird. My roommate was a juggler. Well, he knew how to juggle, but he was going to be a part of the show, right? And we're like, there's a real juggler right there. And we're on our way to the first show. We were like, let's pick him up. So he was hitchhiking and juggling. So we pick him up. And we're like, hey, want to go do a show? He's like, let's do it. So we went and
been trying to get to Shreveport all day.
Yeah. We stayed at my parents' house. We spent the night with this homeless guy, juggler. That night, and the next day went to the show, and it was like a college singles kind of event. And he opened the juggler. Oh, he did the first 15 minutes, and then It was my turn, and I went on, and it was terrible. But I don't think they knew how bad it was, but it was terrible. I was like, well, let's bring him back, bring Andrew back up on stage, juggle some more. He was like a pro. Well, anyway, so that was my first experience.
Can you juggle knives?
I know, right?
Just keep giving him stuff.
Yeah.
So how long was it from bought the book to your first show?
Yeah, it was probably about 8 months.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe 9 months. But it was less than a year, and I was it felt really strange. I mean, it felt really strange to tell someone, I'm here to do a show. I am an illusionist. I mean, it felt so strange because that's not me. That's not who I was. And I didn't know, I didn't even know what I was doing. But the first show went, I mean, it was not good, but because in the moment I realized I have to present this, I have to communicate this, I have to tell people like a story with these things. I can't just go A plus B equals C. I can't just, like, there's people here and I can't do a do-over. I'm not in front of a mirror. So, but the next show was not as bad. The next one was not as bad. The next one was not, it just kind of got better. And so, but part of that was also, it helped me develop a style that was kind of non-normal, like not the normal kind of magician that you would see on TV, David Copperfield kind of thing, like, or whoever. Like, I wasn't that. I was more laid back and just kind of like, didn't take myself seriously because I couldn't take myself seriously.
Right.
Because I did not know what I was doing. But it just started getting better and getting better. And I worked hard. I worked, you know, practiced a lot. You know, I just keep doing it. And so it's been, well, this is my 20th year. So
I'm
still doing it.
So you mentioned something that I think John Paul would be great for listeners to hear about. And you talked about the communication and being in that moment and realizing, oh, like, this isn't about just the trick. I also have to tell a story through this and communicate something specific to point them in a direction. And so communication is something that all of our listeners, ministry, student ministry leaders, deal with on a weekly basis, sometimes multiple times a week, and just honing that craft of communication. So talk a little bit about what you've done over the years to improve on that communication, to make sure that when you communicate, there is a clear point that the audience is following you and going somewhere with you. Just kind of talk about that art of communication.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think what you just said is exactly it. It's an art. And, you know, you've got to take people on the journey. We're taking them to a certain place. For me, I use visuals and I even use stories to kind of get people to connect. I think that people would do well or better at communication if they just learn people and learn how to read people. As you're on stage, you're watching the audience. If everybody's kind of just zoned out or kind of looking at each other or starting to talk, you're probably not reaching them. Like there's a disconnect. There is, like I said, it's an art. You got to read them, and it's a little bit more of a dance. You're like, okay, I think this is connecting. Let's camp here. Let's enhance this a little bit more. I see a lot of people do things that interrupt their communication journey down the road. Let me give you an example. I think John Paul and I were talking about this at some point.
I thought you were going to say this one time John Paul was preaching.
I
was there on a Wednesday night when you were preaching. And
a lot of times people will ask me to consult them, like different magicians in the world will ask me to consult them, and they'll go, man, I'm not doing really well. Like the show is not connecting real well. It's not, you know, and I say, okay, send me a video of your show, but start the video 10 minutes before you take the stage. Because I want to see what happens in the 10 minutes before you go on. Because what happens there is setting you up and setting an atmosphere that's going to determine how well you can share the gospel 45 minutes or an hour later.
That's good. Yeah.
So take that in youth ministry on a Wednesday night. Here's what I see happen so often. And this surprises people when I come in and do it differently. Well, like when I'm booked to come into a city, I do it differently than what maybe is the standard. I see youth pastors go, okay, let's open the door. That's a good thing, by the way, to have a door opening time. Like you're going to open at a certain time, builds anticipation. They go, oh, we're going to open the door. But before we open the door, we're going to take the music and we're going to crank it to 11. We're going to boost it as loud as we can, make it feel like a club in here, and then open the door and everybody run in. Well, here's what happens. The MC has to yell into the mic over everything. And then when it's time to actually start to get serious, you know this, if you ever get in your car after you've driven home, you know, that night with the radio up, you get in the next morning, it's really loud, you know, but you don't hear that when you're, because you keep turning it up a little bit as you go.
Yeah.
Well, same thing happens with our ears. Our ears have to settle. And if we start everything on 11, we have nowhere to go with it.
Huh.
And so what happens is, and I see a lot of performers and speakers, they're yelling into the microphone. So by the time they're getting to their message, one thing is the ears are numb, but then you have no variable. You have nowhere to go with your voice. And a lot of times it's best to go like go down instead of go up. A lot of people, they want to go louder to get their attention. Sometimes it's better to pause. Sometimes it's change the cadence, change that rhythm, maybe change the volume, maybe get slower or soft. Then you can get their attention. And even in a really noisy room, all of a sudden it gets still. Because what happens is even the guys in the back go, wait, shh, 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 I can't hear what he said. Instead of just yelling, and hey, in the back, I hope you can hear this. So that's like one little thing that you can change at the beginning of the night that will help you when it comes time to do the message.
So how do you craft the experience from top to bottom when you say, so I just recently saw Brock do a show. When you get to the story of the woman at the well, you have kind of led us on a journey to prime that moment. How do you think through how you're priming the audience to get there well? You know, so we've talked about the start. What about the meat of the show?
Sure. Well, there's only a few things that people really care about. Now, I don't mean to be crass about this, but there are only a few things that the human really cares about on a deep level. Sex, money, power. I mean, you could probably name about five things. You know, maybe, I don't know what the list is, but there's only a few things that people really care about. Finding in my show, for example, or any communication journey, you want to find a few things that you're going to touch on that are on that really fundamental level of what people truly care about. So there's certain things that I do in the show where I say things or do things that hit on one of those different things. You've seen me, John Paul, you've seen me do a thing in the show called Love Connection, where I take two people on stage and it's this whole matchmaking kind of thing. And that's about love and relationship. And,
yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like that will bring people to a point of like, ah, but then I'll try to, and I don't always do maybe as well as I want to do, but I always try to find a little thing that I can kind of tease there, what will happen in the message. And I keep it real subtle because it's art. I'm not trying to connect every dot. I want it to be a little bit of self-discovery. So, when I talk about the woman at the well, for example, you know, if I do something about relationships, well, guess what? We're about to talk about her relationship, how she's been married five times. And, you know, you see the idea. So you're kind of planting these little, it's almost little breadcrumbs, you know? And so I just find little things. And if I can say anything in the show part that will be a callback, that can be a callback from the message, then bonus, great, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if I explained that or did that justice, but that's as I kind of go through that, the meat part, I'm essentially trying to build rapport. So I'm just finding ways to connect with people. If I make them laugh or if I make them cry, whatever, before it's time to get serious, then getting serious is a whole lot easier.
Yeah. I noticed this time that you, I think a difference between this show and the last show that I saw you do, there was a little bit more comedy in this one than there was. I think the last show that I saw, and that, I think it's been a few years between.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit more serious, like the really a lot of mystery, a lot of that kind of a feel to the last show. And I noticed this one you injected. I mean, I was rolling, laughing at several points. Is that just your personality coming out, or is there a lot of intentionality between when I'm going to make you laugh and when I'm going to get you quiet and how that ties in?
I think there's three things at play. I think one of it is just I'm developing that over the years. Two, I've changed my perspective on what my show should be so that my personality can come out and have more room to play. And then the third thing is the audience. A lot of times the audience is giving me things to work off, because a lot of my comedy is based on like what's happening in the moment. And some audiences don't give you a lot, you know, and some that give you tons, you know. This weekend I was up in Alaska. I was trying to find a couple, an older couple, to be on stage to do this one piece. It just so happens that it was perfect. I mean, what she said and what he said, they'd been married for 30 years or 40 years. What she said and what he said was like perfect. It was putting the ball on the tee. It was just so easy. So there was a lot of comedy in that moment right there. Well, of course, that became the best part of the weekend. Everybody loved that moment.
Yeah.
But sometimes the audience just gives it to you. So what I've had to learn is I've got to create little moments that will either lead them to a place where they do give it to you, and also open up a little space where you can have a little room to work. So if everything is scripted, when it's just word for word, you're just going to go all the way through a script. A lot of people recommend that. But for me personally, I like being a lot more loose so that I can find those little gold nuggets along the way and exploit it.
And that's probably something for anyone who's communicating to think through. I know I've gone through seasons of, I'm going to write down every word. I'm going to say every word I wrote.
Yeah.
To, I'm going to write down every word, and then I'm only going to take an outline with me on stage. Then sometimes it's, I'm going to hammer home 1 point, or I'm going to go with 3 points. And all of those differences allow more or less room for some of that. But I don't think that I have all too often considered, man, I'm going to just see how this part of the message lands, and I can go this way or this way with it.
Yeah. It's an interesting, like if you think about, because I would say, again, having been with you several times, is that you're preaching a message from start to finish. Like that's, you weave it in throughout everything that you do. And so when you think about, and obviously it looks a little different than like when you or I stand up to preach, because we don't have those kinds of tools or skills in it. So it looks a little different, but thinking through those elements and kind of remember those old books, those like choose your own adventure kind of books where you get to page 30 and it says, if you go in the cave, turn to page 60 and you decide kind of how to take it. I've never approached a message that way and kind of prepared two different directions based on how the audience responds. That's an interesting view of that. The other thing that I thought made my ears stand up metaphorically was when you mentioned just leaving room for your personality to come out. And so many times, I think preachers, communicators see a style and grab on to that mm-hmm. style and try to fit themselves into that style rather than just, now this isn't an excuse to not prepare well, like I'm just being me, no, but actually just be you and find your own personal voice in that message. I mean, even the writers of scripture, inspired by the Holy Spirit, had a voice.
Sure.
You know, Matthew writes differently than Paul. And so I think that's something that is lost in communication and preaching a lot.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I think that it's smart to, especially with teen culture, to not be too polished.
Yeah.
Like let it have a little bit of rough spots. Again, we're not talking about lack of preparation, because I think you've got to be ready. You've got to have a word from God before you step up on that stage.
Yeah.
But have room. It's got to be your own voice, but also essentially communication. It's a conversation. So if you're having a conversation with your audience, there's two things that can happen. One, I mean, you're the only person that's literally talking, but secondly, like, they're listening and they're responding mentally. So you can even give it a little bit of a, you know, rhetorical or whatever you want to say, where it's like you're looking at people in the audience. You can even name them by name from time to time. Now, that can get goofy if you do too much of that, but I'm saying you can keep it where it's very personal. Yeah. Where, like, we're having a conversation. We're hanging out here. I've done that with groups of, you know, small of 50 or 100, but I've also done it with large groups of, you know, 10,000, 5,000, 2,000, whatever it is. And you can still make it really, really personal for the guy sitting, you know, 18 rows back.
Yeah. So let's talk about preparation, because that's something that you obviously have done a lot of since day one when you bought your book.
The book.
So what does that look like for you in preparing to really execute those shows well?
Well, primarily, I want to make sure that I'm prepared spiritually. So I think that that all starts with prayer and, like, being still. So part of my preparation, I think, has to do with my Sabbath. So one day a week, it's Tuesdays for me. When I'm home, if not, we may do it another day, but Tuesdays, I basically start with, you know, from 8 to 12 is just me and God, unplugged, no phone, no computer, nothing, just me and God. And then from 12 to 5 is hobby. And then from 5 to midnight is date night and, you know, family stuff. So I think that
midnight's late.
Yeah.
That's a late night.
Yeah.
Maybe till 10. How's that? Okay.
I was going to say 10 o'clock. I'd be like, we got to cut this off.
But I think it starts with kind of a little bit of a rhythm of, like, stopping. You know, it's like the best way to start is to stop. So I've found that for me, like, I can be a lot more spiritually productive and kind of get there quicker if I just kind of do that Sabbath principle and go, God, I'm just going to trust you. I'm just going to not work in a prime day of the week to work. Because I work on weekends, which obviously probably, you know, a lot of listeners do as well. But just that's it. I'm just going to not work. And so then my brain settles. It's kind of like, I don't have an orange juice bottle here, but just pretend, or you can imagine this is an orange juice bottle. If I'm shaking this up, this is a water bottle, by the way, if you can't see.
Sounds like orange juice to me.
If this orange juice shook up for a while, and then you just let it sit. After some time, all the sediment would get down to the bottom, and it would be clear. You know, all the orange would be at the bottom, but as soon as you start shaking it, you can't see through it again. So for me, I have to go and let the orange juice pulp settle, and then I can start preparing. So two things: spiritually, I'm prepared. I'm in the Word. I'm praying. I'm doing ministry, and there's opportunities that come up that make it ready to be presented. And then just on a practical side, I'm always studying and continuing that study. So for me, I have to study not only in the, you know, theological sense, but I have to in my art form. So with illusion and, you know, those types of books, I spend a lot of time learning that and then practicing that. I cannot get lazy on that. When I do, it may take a year, but it'll start. You'll notice it.
Yeah.
Also, I'm having to do new content every week right now. So I produce a little magic message video that I'd release every Monday morning on my Facebook page and my YouTube channel. I have to create something every single week. So Monday's coming whether I like it or not. It's always coming.
Yeah.
Which is the discipline of having to work hard every week and not get lazy to get there. And some weeks, knowing I'm going to be out of the country, out of town, whatever, I have to kind of get ahead a little bit. So what I found in doing that is it's work, but then there's a joy. There's a joy in the discipline, especially when you see kind of the fruit of it. So when I see people watching my videos and commenting and sharing them with their friends and knowing that that is building the kingdom by advancing the gospel in all these different places around the world and places that I won't go this year and having conversations without me, that's a beautiful thing. And that takes me back to, it's because I had the discipline of working hard to produce that.
Yeah,
and I think we have to keep that perspective as the message that we come up with for Sunday or Wednesday or whatever it is, like, that's not just that day. That will continue. It's a ripple effect that will happen throughout, you know, throughout the world.
Yeah. So, and the same thing would be true for the volunteer training meeting that you do and what you impart in those moments is going to be passed down as those leaders are with their students and so on and so on. So how long would it be? So say you start practicing a trick from not just the mechanics of it, but the storytelling, like the whole thing. How long, it's probably different for different things, but average, how long before when you start working on it would you take to feel like, okay, I've practiced this and it will land well with an audience?
Yeah, I would say generally 4 or 5 months, 6 months would be some of the easier things that I do. It takes that long to kind of develop it and script it, and then I start kind of working it in. Some other things will take a year or longer, and some stuff actually takes a lot longer. But what people don't know that I do is oftentimes I will take something in what's called hammocking. I'll take a strong tree of something I know is going to work really well, and then another one that I know is going to work really well, and then I'll put the new thing right in between it.
Yeah.
I put it right in between and let it kind of, like a hammock.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work...
You've still got the tree.
Still got that tree over there. People don't notice it. I generally try to do that. And what happens is some things I can't do because they're too much of a feature. And so in those times, I work really hard and get it ready. And then, but essentially what I'm saying is you have to put it on stage. And that's where the work really begins. For me, I'm having to develop it, work it, and you're massaging it on stage. And it takes me, this may sound goofy, but it takes me 100 performances before I start to feel like this is going to be okay.
Wow.
And 100 performances, I go, I think we're getting somewhere. But it takes 100 performances in front of real people before you can find the good stuff.
Yeah.
I can look for it in my studio at home and work on it. I can look for it. But generally, the good things that you just can't find or write, it comes by doing it. And it takes a while.
Yeah. Man, that's a strong principle when you take that over into preparing for whether it's an event or preparing to teach or preach or lead a meeting. That much time and preparation and discipline it takes to sit there and work on something over and over and over to feel good about it landing. And I think the hammock principle too is a pretty good strategy for preparing a message. And you know, if you go read communication books, you know, you start with a strong introduction, finish with a strong conclusion. And if you nail those, then people tend to forget the mistakes you make in between. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. I think it was really significant and we haven't hit that yet. And you mentioned there as a worker in the sawmill, that evangelism was already something that you were seeking out, that it was, you know, we've talked about on the podcast before, if evangelism isn't in the heart of the leader, it's never going to make its way to the heart of the students, that it has to be a personal passion long before it's a ministry passion or reflected in the ministry. So that was already in you, and you were seeking out ways to do that versus honing a skill and realizing, oh, I can do evangelism with this. And I think that order is really, really important and really interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how you prioritize evangelism in everything that you do. And so like the connecting point here would be sometimes in student ministry, a lot of preparation is done in the message moment, and then we tag the gospel on at the end. And then there's that, quote, invitation time. And sadly, like that piece gets a lot less attention than the whole message, so to speak. So I'd love to hear how you kind of walk through that and keep evangelism as the priority as you build out your show.
Well, I think the answer is intent. I think there's probably a lot of ways you can do it right. But one way maybe. But I think the answer, it starts with intent. I intend to do that. I intend to find a way to bring everything to this moment of just kind of delivering the gospel. So it may be a hook that I'm looking for. It may be, you know, I've heard some people talk about it's a funnel. You know, you're funneling everything down to this one moment, and then right at the edge of the exit of the funnel, that's the moment. You have to determine where that moment is going to be in your in your meetings.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for a hook, like some sort of either visual or even just some sort of idea that I can just hook it on. And I love the whole idea of being gospel centric. So as I approach anything, I'm just trying to figure out how can I make the gospel clear in this? Sometimes it's, well, I'd put it this way. Almost every time that's leading me to the challenge of, an invitation and a chance for people to respond to
right.
it. But sometimes because of the meetings or because of the church or because of the conference or the whatever, like it's just not appropriate or they're just not prepared for an actual invitation. Maybe we've already done that, but I just want to bring it to a point where at least people are hearing and understanding, and it keeps taking you back to the idea of the finished work of Jesus on the cross. It's like I said, I don't know that there's a right way. I just think intent is where you have to start. Like knowing this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of people who maybe have gotten rid of invitations, in their meetings, churches. I really have a hard time with that. I really think that people need a chance to respond. Mm. I don't know, maybe I'm getting sidetracked here, but that's something where I see consistently joy from the church. They see joy when new believers come to follow, and it's just it fuels the continual work. So, just bring it back to it's just got to be gospel centric. Everything we do has to lead. Oh, here's one thing I was going to say. We think a lot of times people start thinking that the gospel is for lost people.
Well, yeah,
yeah, but also it's for saved people.
Yeah,
it's for me. So even in a message where I go, oh well, these are all church people. Well, first of all, that's a great mission field for me, but but I want the gospel to be clear, even if I know it's all pastors.
That's big.
Yeah, yeah. Now there may be other things to talk about. It's not just every time I'm on stage, it's only that, but it all is coming back to that. And that finished work of Jesus applies to us every day, and it applies to every part of us.
Yeah, I think that's something so key to remember as a student pastor, because I think especially when we approach evangelistic events or whatever title you want to put on it, but a gathering of people for the purpose of sharing the gospel and seeing people saved, I think the impact that the gospel has on God's children in that moment is often overlooked in order to focus on the lost becoming saved. And that's what's something that is so beautiful about every time we open God's word and every time we, to use your language, every time we're intent on sharing the gospel, is that God can take that and speak to a person's heart in whatever direction he chooses to, as long as we're sharing that truth and like you said, preparing with the intent to get to that moment, because that moment matters for both the saved and the lost. So let's shift gears briefly. And anytime I've asked this question of worship leaders and other people who travel and speak a lot, they always have stories where crazy stuff happens. You know, they're in the middle of Toad Suck, Arkansas, which is a
been there.
Is that a place?
It is an actual place
near Little Rock, west of Little Rock.
That's right. Or something crazy happens. And so I wouldn't want to leave our podcast today without getting some type of craziness that has happened to you as you've been out on the road.
Where do I start? Oh my goodness, we have a whole book full of things. We wrote a book called Thrill Ride, and it's full of these crazy stories. let me just tell you one. Man, I'll just Toad Suck, Arkansas. I've been there.
That's one of those places they need to do the campaign where they let all the school kids write down potential new names for the city and give away a prize right. for the best one.
So I have so many of these stories going through my mind. Maybe I should tell this one. This one's one I have not been able to tell very often. So I'm going to tell one that's maybe not in the book. This is kind of a fairly new story, but I was in Wichita, Kansas, and a couple of years ago, and we'd spent the entire week, promoting the show, getting everything focused on this one night. I'm going to do this big show. All these people showed up and it was packed. I mean, it was just nowhere to sit down. Which is great. I love that. Well, there are a lot of Spanish people spoke up, Spanish speaking people showed up as well. And, And so they started giving out the earphones with an interpreter that could speak into the headsets so they could hear in Spanish, because I don't speak Spanish very much.
Yeah.
Especially not at the same time I'm doing English, right? No bueno. Well, at the end of the night, we started seeing some of the, you know, Spanish-speaking people make a decision to follow Christ. And there was one lady in particular who needed an interpreter, but she didn't have the ears on during the message. But she only spoke Spanish, but she heard my message in Spanish.
Whoa.
And she became a believer, which was really amazing. But that's the craziest thing. She heard it in her own language.
Yeah.
This happened in Kansas.
That sounds like the Bible.
Is incredible.
It was amazing.
Incredible.
I was blown away, you know. Yeah. But I love those supernatural stories like that where we have nothing to do with it. Only it's only God. Like,
yeah.
God just went, I love this person so much that even though they've run out of, you know, headsets, I'm just gonna take care of this for you.
Yeah.
You know? And so I mean we've had other stories where we show up and so many people show up that there's as many people waiting in line outside to get in as there are already people seated. And it's, how do you put these people in? We were in Illinois one night and there was a line wrapped all the way around the building into the parking lot, like all the way to the road. It was crazy. And I don't remember the numbers or how many we, you know, would seat in that place, but we filled it up and realized there's still that many people outside. So we started taking down our backdrop and we started putting people on the stage and behind us. And
wow,
we filled the place up. We had more than double capacity. Don't tell anybody this.
Yeah. Fire marshal, stay away.
Yeah. It was just unbelievable. And then you see just the things, just a lot of times when you do outreaches, especially a lot of times we'll do them like in a high school gym or a high school theater where we bring a lot of people. And, you know, there you see a lot of opposition. Just a spiritual sense, like there's a spiritual opposition here where you can just feel it in the atmosphere. Yeah. And we've seen crazy things happen in the moment, like right as the show's supposed to start, boom, all the power goes out. Or, you know, right when this is supposed to happen, like something breaks, you know, or right when I'm supposed to start the message, you know, this happens, you know.
Yeah.
You know, recently it was a storm started and literally like right when I started, the huge storm where you couldn't even hear through the speakers. And it was like, well, I guess we're going to stop. But usually God just does these really incredible things to patch that all up and make it work. And a lot of times it works to our benefit.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea of like, man, God is really into evangelism. He's really into it.
Yeah.
Because he wants to seek and save lost people. That's his mission. He wants that. So I love seeing him kind of come through.
Yeah. And phrasing it that way, it's such a good perspective to keep too. It's like we're just joining in on what he's doing. Yeah. Like he's already doing it, and he just invites us to come along for the ride and be faithful.
Yeah,
I love that. So here in a second, I've been excited about this the whole time. Brock has a trick that is doable via podcast, and so this is going to be fun. And here in just a second, we'll launch into that. And so if you're driving, you may want to pause and find a place to stop so that we don't cause you to wreck in just a moment. Or if you're riding your bike or jogging or whatever it is that you're doing, take a little breather. But before we do that, so I'm like a Magic fan. I'm like, I could geek out on it all the time. I don't know if I've mentioned that on the podcast before, but I watch it and love it. And like I was in Seattle a little while back and there's a Magic shop in the Pike's Place Market, and I could have spent all day in there. So
sure.
Do you have a favorite trick or favorite thing that you do that's like, you love it so much, like you have to choose not to put it in because you just love doing it?
Yes, I have a few things that are on that list that I want to do just everywhere, but I can't always do them. One is my blindfold motorcycle ride. I love doing the.
Ooh, that's a good one.
It is good. It is good.
Yeah, I did that at your event. You've seen it at least once, right?
You did it at Liberty, and you've done it at the bridge.
Yeah. Just have someone from the audience blindfold my eyes, and then I hop on my dirt bike and run that thing down the aisles, and it's a blast. I mean, it's loud, and you can smell the exhaust, and you can just—it's nothing but adrenaline, you know. Yeah.
And you're not going slow either. I mean, you're
that's true.
Yeah, that's the one that gets my heart racing. Like, out of anything, like, that's one of the most difficult things I've ever done.
Yeah, I'd be worried about driving a motorcycle in a crowd, too.
Yeah.
So, now, unblindfolded.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that YouTube video of that youth pastor that rides the motorcycle in and,
right,
like,
into the wall.
Yeah, he, like, pops a wheelie and almost takes out his youth workers.
There was one
time. He did that to promote my show at his church.
Really?
I was there like a couple weeks after. Yeah.
That's the greatest thing.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that video, you can
go to
YouTube.
It's like youth pastor rides motorcycle, crash something. It's been on every reality, like a TV show that shows those reality videos. It's been. He actually tore his knee up, had to have surgery.
After that, wow.
Yeah.
That's
it was nuts.
A deep love for you that he has.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Brock one time launched his dirt bike off of the stage, the platform, like in our sanctuary at the church in Virginia, just trying to scare my wife. We were sitting, both of us, on the front pew. And it was after the show, we were tearing everything down. And I nearly jumped out of my skin when he came off the stage. And he just locks it down right in front of Crystal. Crystal was playing a game on her phone. And she just looked up and said, "I'm trying to play bubbles." I was like, "What in the world?" My wife has got ice flowing
She's
through her
hilarious.
Veins. She was not
that's
phased
so
at all.
Good.
Yeah. That's one. Obviously, I can't do that everywhere. A lot of times I fly, and so my show is scalable. But that's one that I really love doing. It's a whole lot of fun. Just the stories that come with it afterwards. You know, like that one. Hey, you rode a motorcycle through our building. You know, that's just it's so much fun.
It would be difficult to pull off in this room. It's like a 4x4
closet.
I think the trick would getting the bike in here, period.
that would be the trick. So without further ado.
Yeah, let's do something. Everyone that's listening is going to have to use their imagination. And obviously, they're not going to be able to see all of this. But I think that this is going to work great if everybody just listens and takes part. I think there's going to be a little bit of a mystery that happens in your own mind right now. So do this. Just go ahead and picture yourself. It's let's say it's you have a friend who or a family member has a birthday, or maybe it's a Christmas gift, but you want to buy them a gift. So you go shopping. You walk into a store and you find something that you want to buy for that person. So you have your whatever that gift is. Just look at it for a second. You got the gift in your mind. Good. Now I want you to look into your pocket and see how much money you have. Now there's no coins, but there's a few dollars. So count those dollars and keep that in your mind.
Are we looking at our figurative pockets
in
this vision
or
our real
pockets?
This is
totally imagination. Just in your mind, look into your wallet or your pocket and see how much money you have. Just, I mean, not hundreds, just a few dollars, whatever that is, you know, between one and, I don't know, whatever. Just, you've got some money in your mind. You got it?
Got it.
All right, I'm getting nods here.
I've got it.
Okay, good. Good. Again, no coins, but you've got a few dollars in your head. This will make this easier. Keep this amount of money in your mind. Unfortunately, the gift that you see right now is too expensive. So you decide to go home to get more money. On the way home, you see a friend, and the friend loans you some money. He loans you the same amount of money that you already have in your pocket. So count all of that, those sums together. So now you have it in your mind. Don't say it out loud, but you've got that amount of money in your mind. Right?
If you didn't make me downgrade from the beginning, I would have had enough money in my pocket.
So now you go back to the shop, but in the meantime, the gift has been sold. So now you're frustrated and you go home. When you get home, you find a letter in the mailbox from me, inside a $10 bill. So add that to your pocket. So now you have a new sum of money that only you know that's in your mind right now. You go back to the shop, and on your way, you find a different shop that has it, and you find that gift, and you found it. Maybe it's on sale. It costs you half of the contents that's in your pocket right now. So you keep the rest of the money in your mind, and you head out of there. So now you're happy. You've got some money in your pocket and the gift, right? You got it? On the way home, you see your friend, and you give him back the money that he loaned you. Keep the rest of the money in your mind. in your imagination, you have a certain amount of money in your mind right now. You've got that amount of money in your mind. Some of you maybe are using calculators right now trying to figure out. You've got it.
I'm glad I started low.
Good. So there's a certain amount of money that's in your mind right now. That is imagination. Now, John Paul over here is going to open his wallet.
I'm now opening.
Open it up.
My wallet.
I can attest that he is doing that.
Inside your wallet, go ahead, open that. Open the envelope. Inside that.
An item here that Brock has placed.
Yep. There's an amount of money inside. Read what it says.
Oh, gosh.
I can't see the amount yet. Yes.
What does it say? Is impossible.
What does it say?
$5.
I had $5 left.
There you go.
I also had $5 left, as you can see on my calculator right now.
And listen, I've been in here the whole time, and there was
no funny business.
None. At
Brock, this is... And by the way, Brock told that whole story in Swahili.
Right. And you heard it in your own language. Yeah.
No, this is crazy.
That was
this
unbelievable.
Crazy. You like that?
I like
awesome.
It. If you also got the same amount, $5, tweet us. Let us know about it. Also, tweet at Brock at?
Brock Gill, BrockGill.
So, Brock, thanks for making the time to come on the podcast. We appreciate it. I would encourage you to find out more stuff about Brock Gill's ministry at brockgill.com, BrockGill. There's information about his ministry, more about him, as well as some ways that you can book him and become part of his ministry. You guys can partner together. Also, the videos that he releases on Monday, the Magic Monday videos that you can find on Facebook and his YouTube. So head over there, like his Facebook page, and check him out on YouTube as well. Like I said at the beginning, both John Paul and I have had Brock in for events when we were in student ministry in the local church, and everything that you heard him say was exampled and illustrated by the way that he leads in those moments and the way that he shares the gospel. So check out Brock Gill and all of his information there. If you haven't left a rating and review, head over to iTunes, take 30 seconds, leave that positive rating and review. It helps other student ministry leaders like you find the student ministry podcast content. While you're there, hit that subscribe button, and that's all of the stuff we say at the end.
If this room was any bigger, I would be still running around it in disbelief.
No doubt. My favorite thing is... and we will wrap this podcast, I promise. But I think one of my favorite things is when you do school, when you do stuff at schools.
Yeah.
Because people really do that. Like, they just freak out and run around.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. So have Brock come into your city. It's a great opportunity for outreach in your area. Thanks for listening. See ya.